America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Good evening, Kansas City. The 2023 NFL Draft is in the books, but character concerns rolls on. That crackling sound you hear is Jay Binkley gripping the microphone with his kung fu grip, and that is the cracking open of a fresh, unnamed energy drink.
And I have nowhere for it to go, but just keep it up here for Clegg tomorrow.
Well, you just let it breathe.
Just keep it.
Yeah, just let it breathe. With Jay Binkley, Chris Unocero, I'm Nick Schwert. We've got you till 9 o'clock. We'll be talking all things the 2023 NFL Draft. I don't think we're going to be giving out draft grades. We didn't talk about this beforehand. It's not on the rundown. Very little is on the rundown tonight. That's kind of our MO. But I don't know.
It's kind of what we've been doing the last 2 months.
We didn't really talk about this at all this weekend. We're not doing draft grades, right? We don't do draft grades.
I don't really want to do draft grades. I kind of feel like they're overrated, and it's just a way for you to produce some kind of content after the draft happens.
I don't even think they're overrated. I think they are. Does anybody even like them?
I do think there are people that like draft grades. And I do think there are people that find validation when their team gets a good one.
Well, here's the problem with it is that I don't like them either, Chris, but if I see like a graphic on Instagram that says draft grades for all 32 teams at the 2023 NFL draft, I will click on it.
I want to click on it.
I will stop and look at it, and I'll just sit there and mutter to myself, this is so stupid.
Yeah, I looked at a few this weekend. I was like, why am I looking at it? Because like, I already know what it's going to be, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. That's just it, man. I can't help but look at it.
As much as I like the draft, they were asking me this morning on Fesco, you look at the draft grades, said most of them were B, B+, but who cares? You got to ask me next year at this time, even 2 years out, did the draft picks work? Because let me put it this way. A lot of people last year saw Jalen Watson the 7th, and then Isaiah Pacheco. You look at his yards per carry at Rutgers, say, what's Veach doing reaching on Isaiah Pacheco? Then all of a sudden, he's the leading rusher. All of a sudden, Jalen Watson has 2 interceptions against the Jags, and you look at it different. And I told you last week, I brought Mahomes grades up, getting C- and stuff like that. As much as we like to draft grades are dumb. What they are is an editor going to somebody and say, I want your draft grade for all 32 teams.
Okay, then let's start like this, because if I look back at the 2022 draft for the Chiefs, you draft 7 guys who play in the Super Bowl. I don't need another year to know that that was a successful draft class. Yeah, I want to see if some of those guys build off that success into their sophomore campaigns, and I want to see how many of those dudes end up with second contracts on the Chiefs.
9 of 10 in the Super Bowl.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, 9 of 10 in the Super Bowl. 7 of 10 is defensive players.
Yeah, Kennard, like I said, they had 61 starts from rookies. The only two teams with more were
people. That's right, because Nazee Johnson played on special teams.
He was a special teamer.
So, yeah, I want to see what these guys do long term. But you got a Super Bowl. a lot of those guys played massive roles in the Super Bowl. That's already a successful rookie class. But things are different from year to year. You don't ask the same thing from every single draft class. What do you guys think we will look back on, whether it's a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, about this draft class to determine whether or not it was a successful one for Kansas City?
I think the only way to look at it, who started for you, who contributed, you're looking for that person that helps this football team move forward. Just like last year, I mean, you look at it and you look at, okay, Nazi Johnson. Okay, well, you know what? He played special teams. They needed that in the Super Bowl. Trent McDuffie. So he had four guys in the secondary last year. The rookies, and there's Leo Chenault sitting there, and you go, man, he's showing some promise for the Chiefs. Everybody is except Kennard. He was still on the roster. He was still on the roster, but he didn't get playing time. You know what the funny thing is Cornell Powell is now on the roster. He was the one guy, the 22, that was, well, Bo Pete Keys is gone, but he was on the practice squad. It wasn't on the roster. Now he's on the roster, so now you bump it up officially to 21 and 22 because I was using a practice squad guy for it. So who helped the team and contributed? And the whole thing with Brett Veach is he had to go cheap in the later rounds. I mean, he had to hit on the sixth round for Trey Smith the year before, and you look at the seventh round picks last year. That's what happens. And this is what I want to see from Philly. This is what I want to see from the Bengals and Chargers once they pay Burrow and Herbert. Can you win? Once you pay that quarterback, can you go out the next year and do this? Because now the spotlight shifts to your front office. It's not Herbert out on the field. It's not Burrow on the field. It's the front office. Can they evaluate, pick players that will help them career? Because if you don't, do like Veach did last year, you're not going to win. Like, the Chiefs wouldn't have won with these rookies not contributing. They had to contribute. Like, you look at last year's season, it was defined by the rookie class because they had to contribute to get a ring.
I think the interesting thing about this about this year's draft is that it's probably going to be a couple of years before we can really accurately grade what this draft is. Like, we can obviously grade last year's draft because those guys played so much. But this year, I think they got very few guys that I foresee really seeing any significant playing time this year, unless there's some sort of crazy development that happens between now and the end of training camp. I imagine that, I mean, Felix probably is the only day one starter. And then, I mean, maybe Wanye gets time at right tackle. We'll see, but he's still got some work to do. I do think there's guys out there that could earn some time on the field, like maybe B.J. Thompson if he puts on a little more weight. Maybe Keandre Coburn, who I really like. I think he could be a guy that sees some time in the interior of the D-line.
Which he could get a lot of snaps to Colin Saunders. With him being gone, this could be
exactly.
A one
take. Very, very possible there. So, like, I think it could very easily be 2 years before we can really put any sort of accurate grade on this draft class.
That's a good point. We may have to hold off on this one, but it doesn't mean it's not going to be successful. But, you know, Snead's still here. And then the next year, Shamari Connor, more of a role with Snead, even though he'll play special teams this year. So the complete whole package, what do you got? But I think there's going to be enough getting time in the rotation. You can look back and say, okay, I did like this draft class.
Because right now, let's look at this roster. And I should have done this work before. But look at this roster that we have for the Chiefs. How many guys currently on the roster were drafted and have signed a second contract? Mahomes, Kelce, Chris Jones, who am I missing? And don't even say Harrison Butker.
Well, yeah, because he wasn't drafted.
James Winchester?
I don't think he was drafted.
I don't think they drafted
him. He wasn't drafted, but he's got two contracts.
Yeah, but they didn't draft him, though.
Yeah, for like what? $150?
Do you realize? Yeah. Do you realize he's one of the core four that's been here before?
Yeah,
Mahomes.
Yeah, they're going to build a Mount Rushmore.
We're going to have James Winchester over here.
Yeah. Butker and Jones and Kelce.
Is it really? Is it just those three?
Pretty much, yeah.
That have been drafted.
Yeah.
And re-signed?
Yeah, I think so.
That is wild.
But there's a lot of guys that weren't drafted but did get second contracts or one-year deals. Like Fortson, come on back here. Nick Allegretti, okay, but he's one of them because he was drafted by the team and he did get a contract, but just for one more year. But Nick Allegretti did sign.
But
I want to talk about guys who are drafted and then sign extensions. Hey, you're a year away from free agency. Let's lock you
up. We
could
count Derek Nauty on that too. He signed a couple 1 year.
Yeah, Nauty because he re-signed. So Nauty on there. Yeah. You throw Nick Allegretti on there. Again, we're talking role players at this point.
So I mean, that's a tough metric to judge draft picks by because it just doesn't happen as often. Yeah, it'd be great if you had 22 guys on the roster who you drafted homegrown and then you signed to extensions, but that's just not the way that the NFL works. You know, you're looking at a couple of these last two draft classes. I would imagine one of Nick Bolton and Creed Humphrey, if not two of three, including Trey Smith, are going to get contract extensions in Kansas City. There may be a casualty there. Same thing with last year's draft class. Like I would imagine coming up here in a couple of years, you may look to re-sign Trent McDuffie or George Karlaftis and Sky Moore. We'll just see how things progress. So I wonder that with this, because if we're going to talk about this year's draft class as being one that may take an extra year to really gauge, maybe that will be more of a barometer as to whether or not they got this class right. If we fast forward 4 years and you want to sign Felix to a long-term extension, if you want to make Rashee Rice a number one or a number two receiver in this offense beyond his fourth year in his rookie contract, that to me might be something where you look and say, okay, you know what? You drafted this guy. Was he a star? Doesn't really matter. His contract is up, and you want to keep him around Kansas City.
It's kind of the way I've been looking at these picks. I don't necessarily look for the stars at this point because they have enough of them. Just like you said, Nick and Chris, just who's going to contribute? Who are going to be the contributors for this team? And I think they have plenty of contributors. It's kind of like, remember Green Bay with Ron Wolf, even with Favre, and then they, the Packers did win a championship with Rodgers, but they were a competitive team. They'd make the NFC title game and all this. You know they didn't get free agents? Like, that's one of the reasons. Charles Woodson they did, but they didn't bring in free agents. They drafted and developed, and you kind of see the Chiefs this way. It's a way, if you're going to pay Mahomes his money, this is a way to do things on the cheap, and that's by drafting and developing. But the Chiefs have got into that role now where they're saying, like, other teams look at it and say, we need these free agents. And a couple years ago, the Chiefs needed that with Tyrann Mathieu and stuff to kind of spearhead the direction because there was pieces and holes in this roster.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
They said, we need to fill them. That's not the case anymore. Like that first Chiefs Super Bowl run, they're in a much different situation than they were with that first Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think they've been very smart about using their draft assets to hit those key positions. There's a lot of teams out there that when they see a problem, they just start throwing cash at it. We saw that a year ago when
cash is the band-aid.
Teams needed some pass rush help to try to get after Mahomes. And so all these teams just started throwing cash at the problem. And they were overpaying edge rushers to get after Mahomes. and then the Chiefs go out there and use the 30th overall, and they go get a guy who got them 6 sacks last year and was a contributor to the second best pass rush in the NFL, and the Chiefs didn't go out and spend a ton of money on it. They just went out. They made one draft pick at the end of the first round, and then they made one key free agent signing with Carlos Dunlap, and they got their contribution there. Plus, you had guys like Frank and especially Chris Jones that stepped up. So I think that in that regard, the Chiefs are doing it in a way that is much more conducive to success because they don't have to throw money at the problem. They can trust themselves to draft and develop the next wave of talent at certain positions of need.
Doesn't it seem the Chiefs are kind of leading the way to what teams should be doing to compete against them? Because
well, maybe,
with Burrow and Allen, all these great quarterbacks, they're loading up on defensive backs and edge rushers.
But here's the thing.
They're doing what teams are doing to combat the Chiefs, but just doing it better.
Yes, you're right, but it's much easier to commit to that plan when you got two Lombardis in the bank and when you have a formula that works.
I'm just saying they're setting the bar for how teams should be approaching.
But
the
wouldn't
Chiefs.
You agree?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's just like a college football program.
100%.
It's like a bad college football program that hires a new coach and they say, okay, I've seen this at Kansas. I'm only recruiting high school guys. We're not taking shortcuts. We're not taking JUCO guys. We're not taking dudes with character issues. And then you go 1-10 the first year. And you go, okay, well, maybe we'll take a few JUCO guys. You know, this guy's got a checkered past, but we think he's kind of put it behind him and he could help us for a couple of years. Right? You start taking shortcuts because you're looking for instant gratification. We need something that works now. We're 3 years into the plan and we haven't started winning yet. Like, if you're the Bills, if you're the Bengals, you probably are getting a little more impatient than you are if the Chiefs, where you just say, hey, we have a process. It's tried and true. It's worked. We got the hardware to prove it. So we're going to keep doing our thing. Meanwhile, the Bengals and Bills have to say, okay, should we readjust here? Uh-huh. Right? Let's take a step back. Should we rethink how we're drafting? Should we maybe go for guys that can help us right away? Because the Chiefs aren't going anywhere, and we need to start competing. We're going to get more into this draft class. All 7 guys that the Chiefs drafted over the weekend. Who helps the most right now? Who helps the most in the future? We'll evaluate it every way possible. With Jay Binkley, Chris Nocera, I am Nick Schwartz. Character Concerns on 610 Sports Radio.
This is an NFL Draft Special with the Character Concerns podcast crew. Subscribe and download today on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. 610 Sports Radio.
About a quarter past 6. This is Character Concerns on 610 Sports Radio with Chris Nocera, Jay Binkley. I am Nick Schwartz. Thanks for hanging out with us. We've had a lengthy weekend starting on Thursday. We were on for 6 hours.
Wednesday began, buddy. The ball started rolling.
That's right. Wednesday.
Well, actually, during the podcast.
Well, Monday. Actually, yeah, we did a podcast Monday.
We did a Megapod.
We did Drafts and Drafts on Tuesday.
Yeah.
You guys did a radio show Wednesday. We did 6 hours on Thursday. We did like 4 hours on Friday. We did 3 hours on Saturday. Yep. The Sunday, the Lord's Day, we took that day off. And then we're back at it tonight until 9 o'clock.
And we've got our mock 2024 for Detroit ready to go. All 3 of us have mocked.
Should we do
next
it?
Year.
Has the mock draft, does anybody know, has the mock draft simulator?
We should.
Has it updated for next year's
Joe Alt's
class yet?
100% no.
Yeah, we should do it. Joe Alt?
No.
Joe Alt, John Alt, played for the Chiefs. His son plays in Notre Dame. He's going to be a top 5.
Yeah.
We've got Bowers. Where's he going? 6? Or is
I think he's
go
going
3?
Fourth. I think he's going fourth.
But 1 and 2 is probably Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr.
Drake May.
I mean, we say that. Here's the thing. We say this now. But if you look at way too earlys from last year and compare them to what they were this year, most of them are wrong.
Well, our only problem is we don't know where teams are going to finish.
Todd McShay actually did really good.
McShay got like what, like 5 or 6 right in the top 10?
Yeah, but like some of the guys that he had in the top 10 still went first round.
Right,
like he had Jackson Smith and Jake Brown.
Yeah, but we know it's going to be good. The top 10 next year is easy.
But like there are so many guys that I always look at a lot of way too earlys after the draft because I put together a watch list for players to watch during the season. And so I always go through and look at that, and it's like, you know, most of these guys are going to fall out of the top, the first round that are projected to go there before the season.
But like Caleb Williams, what's his floor?
Right, exactly. I mean,
6th?
I think his floor is probably still top 10, but like – I mean, there was thought that like the receiver class was going to be better than what it was. And for a while, there were mocks where it was better than what it was. And then we saw on draft day it wasn't. So there's right now, it's so hard to project because you just don't know what's going to happen a year from now.
Well, I think the toughest thing is you don't know who's going to fit and who's going to be where. Because then you don't know the fit.
Are we all in Has everybody looked at a way too early mock draft for next year today?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking at one now.
Yeah, I think I looked at two today.
Chris and I were discussing it before the show.
Yeah, I looked at some on Saturday just to kind of see if there were some guys that weren't already on my
I saw one with that wide receiver from Washington, Rome.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't remember his name.
When do you guys come out on Quinn Ewers being top 10? Because I've seen that a few times.
Okay, let's not get too.
We're going too deep.
We're going too deep, and let's.
I feel Arch Manning's gonna take his job this year.
I literally have seen 8 quarterbacks mocked in the first round.
Can you be a top 10 quarterback and lose your job to Arch Manning?
All right. We got it. Let's stick with 2023 for now.
Okay. Good point.
You know, we got 2.5 hours left, so
we got time.
Maybe if we get time, we'll start diving into next year's draft. Earlier today, the GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, Brett Veach, was on with The Drive, and he was talking about the possibility, the discussion, the chances of the Chiefs trading out of the first round on Thursday night and what those conversations were like.
Oh, he was excited, and you know, what a cool moment that was. And I'm sure people will say, well, we had to stay there at 31, and I can assure you that wasn't the case. In fact, when he was up there at the stadium, he, or at the train station, he asked, he said, what do you think we're going to pick here or trade? And I told Clark, I said, well, you know, if it's only a couple spots down, there could be an opportunity where we do it. But if it's, you know, in the high 30s or 40s, we're probably just going to sit there and stay. But so it worked out the way it was supposed to work out. But it was certainly a great moment for Clark and, you know, our fans. And what a great job Kansas City did. I mean, they should certainly be proud. I mean, the league office, their work, Kathy Nelson at the Sports Commission, Mayor Lucas and his crew. I mean, it was just a fantastic weekend. Mark Donovan helping out with our staff up there. So it was a great weekend for everyone. I think Kansas City should be very proud. They put on an unbelievable display, and it was certainly cool for Clark to have that moment with the fans.
Okay, so let's ignore the last 20 seconds or so of that answer. What he said was, when Clark kind of asked him if they were going to trade out,
which was the big question,
he said, if they could do it before the early 30s or 40s, they might do it, but they weren't going to do it past the early 30s or 40s. So, with that being said, what do you think was the ultimate determining factor in the Chiefs sticking at 31 and selecting Felix and Udike Uzomah out of K-State?
Well, we know they probably weren't going to jump up beyond 21. 21 was kind of, because Brett Veach told Carrington that they weren't probably, 100%, they weren't going to jump up. They had less than 20 first-round grades. Now, would they have moved back? I think they would have. The proposal Peter King was talking about, which I do believe it 100%, he was in the draft war room for the Raiders. Like, he spent the day there. If they would have got picks 38 and 70, that's too good to pass up, in my opinion. First of all, on the trade chart, that's a bonus of, like, what, 60, 65 points. It depends. Sometimes 100 points as far as how good of a deal. But Tevin, 2 2s and 2 3s, I think they would have. But I think they really wanted Felix so bad, they were thinking, okay. So Brett Veach even explained that a little bit to Carrington. So if they do move back to 38 and 70, they're probably going to package a couple of those to move back up to get Felix, because Felix probably not going to be at 38. And it sounded like they were really enamored with him. If they felt they could have got him at 38, I think they would have done it, but they really wanted him.
Okay, so Chris, do you agree, like, do you get the sense, and maybe this is nitpicking here, maybe this doesn't really matter, but do you get the sense that the Chiefs were like going after Felix, or that he just happened to be the guy at the top of their board when they were up? Because the way, maybe I'm reading way too much into like body language and stuff like that, but the way that he described it, it almost kind of seemed like he was just the guy on top of their board, as opposed to, whoa, stop everything, we got to go get this dude.
He called him a 25 to 40 prospect.
I don't think it was a, hey, we have to do everything we can to get this guy. Because we obviously heard that Mozzie Smith was a guy that they were looking to trade up to at 25. I believe that they have certain players pegged in certain tiers in each round. And they're like, okay, if we think that this player is best picked in a certain range. And they said they had Felix as a somewhere between 25 and 40. I do think they entertained trading down, and I don't think they got what they believe to be appropriate value for it in a spot where they could still take Felix. Because I don't think they were that enamored with that many players in that range. Because I know, we obviously know that, like, they really wanted Rashee. Mahomes gave them the stamp of approval and said, hey, this is a guy you need to go get. And so you're starting to get a little bit too close to the Rashee Rice window when you're trading back into the 40s. So I believe that they entertain trading back. They talk to different teams. There's probably a lot of teams that liked too many players to really want to trade back, you know, to trade back up. They were like, hey, we're comfortable where we are. And so the Chiefs were like, hey, we really like Felix, and this is the best spot to take him. So let's take him here, because otherwise we risk either A, not getting him, or B, we risk getting back into a position where we're not able to really, we don't have any other players in that range anyway. So I think it made sense doing what they did. And, you know, sometimes it's the easiest moves is the best one.
And by the way, just for the sake of this argument, Felix went 31st. The next edge rusher to go off the board was 37, Derek Hall.
And it would have been Felix.
And that, and I'll tell you
what, could very well. It could have still been Derek if they like Derek more, if the Seahawks like Derek more.
And so if we are living in an alternate universe where the Chiefs traded out and drafted Derek Hall in the early parts of the second round, I'm sure we would talk ourselves into him the same way we are Felix.
Correct.
But,
yeah.
But 3 years or 2 years older, I believe, between Derek Hall and Felix.
Yeah, right.
So like there is value there at 31 for Felix. That doesn't necessarily mean, oh my gosh, I can't believe they got this guy at 31. Right. Like none of us were shocked that he was available at 31, but it wasn't like this massive reach. It just kind of felt like an appropriate pick, which is fine. Like last year when they got George Karlaftis at 30, it felt like a holy cow. This feels like a steal.
We couldn't believe that.
And this one didn't really feel like that, but that doesn't make it a bad pick.
I think they wanted Felix and they wanted Rashee Rice. I don't think they thought a scenario would be there where they get both. If they did trade back.
Really?
They're sitting there looking at the package of picks. If we move up, I don't know if we're going to get Felix and Rice. But they stayed true to the board and they were patient with. I will say this. I'm not going to put Felix in the same can as Trent McDuffie. I think they valued Trent McDuffie more than Felix this year because they were willing to trade up and get him because they had a top 20 grade on him last year and he started to slip. And once he got past that threshold, the Chiefs moved up and got him. I don't think the Chiefs, put it this way, I don't think the Chiefs would have moved up to grab Felix like they did Trent McDuffie last year. So I say I think McDuffie's more value because the Chiefs were willing to jump up and get him. But I do think they valued Felix. I just don't think they were going to be able to get him and Rashee Rice in the second round because they would have to use some of those picks to move up to get Felix. And I think, and Britt Beach explained it to Carrington, it made a lot of sense. Okay, yeah, we could have moved back, but then all of a sudden we're going to use those picks again for someone to get Felix, but this way we can just stay and get him.
Is there anybody, any of the defensive players that went off the board, like if I'm counting interior defensive linemen, like if I count Brian Breece, if I count Kalijah Kancey, Mozzie Smith, was there anybody on the edge or the defensive line that went ahead of Felix that you would not have wanted to see in Kansas City?
I don't know if I'd have been too keen on Brazee being there just because I can totally see the Chiefs being like, yeah, we're not too keen on him. Cause like there were some production issues when he was at Clemson, you could see the talent, but like there were some issues with production at some time. Sometimes like they even talked about it during the broadcast where there were times where just like, it didn't seem like it was like all effort there. And so you question that. And I think that at that point, if he were there, I could so totally see the Chiefs just moving right past him. I think that they have a certain kind of guy, and I don't know if Breece was that kind of guy
for
them.
I think they would have because it fits into what they need. I think really when you look at 25 to 31, any of those guys, the Chiefs would, Dalton Kincaid, Mozzie Smith, Anton Harris,
but I mean, Murphy, it might be a position that they needed.
I
don't know if they necessarily were high on him.
I'm still at the camp they would have taken Anton Harrison. I really, truly believe they would have taken again, these are all positions they would have got. Maybe not Dalton Kincaid, but if they had a chance to get Dalton Kincaid, they probably would have. They didn't do tight end in this year's draft. But I felt that 25 to 31 was right in the Chiefs' wheelhouse.
Well, the reason why I want to talk specifically about defensive guys is because this is wild. If you count, you know, the outside linebackers like Will Anderson, who went 15th, who I didn't want the Chiefs to take. And if you count interior defensive guys like Kalijah Kancey, 11. Felix and Udike Uzama was the 11th pass rusher taken in the first round. So regardless of how you feel about it, if you say, oh, well, you could have got him early second. Why did they get this guy? Come on. You're drafting 31st.
No, you are.
And you look at this draft class, and it's very evident. Look at what happened in the first round. Look at how many teams said, we need a guy up front who can help us disrupt the passer. We need a guy who can get in the backfield. The Chiefs are in the same boat that virtually every other team is, which is go get a pass rusher. So if this guy who was 11th in his class ends up being a productive player at the next level, it's a score, man. It's a slam dunk.
Felix is not defined. He's still getting better and better every year. Let me flip this question to you, Nick, because you brought this up on draft night. Tyree Wilson. You said if he's in the SEC, is he looked upon differently?
I think he's probably top five pick.
Felix.
Top three.
What if Felix is in the SEC and he's SEC Defensive Player of the Year? Is he 31 or is he 10 or 13?
If he gets 19,
or higher.
If he starts for 2 years in the SEC.
Then at Bama. We'll say that Felix started at Bama.
Same production.
Same production, 19 and a half sacks in
same
2 years.
Same production at Bama or
top
Georgia.
Top 10 pick.
Okay.
He's a top 10 pick.
So, again, I agreed with you on Tyree Wilson. If he's in the SEC, he's higher. We're saying Felix, if he played in the SEC, is higher.
Do you guys agree?
100%. 100%.
6'4", 255. If he's putting up those numbers in the SEC, that's a top 10 pick.
I 100% believe. Like, if you, like, yeah, body comp wise, similar in to Will Anderson Jr. If you produce like that, and especially because he's really young too, he just turned 21, which means he was 20 years old. And mind you, this is a kid that came in way undersized, so he had to pack on a bunch of weight really basically in a year during the COVID year, and then in 21 and 22, he had almost 20 sacks at ages 19 and 20, and you're talking about a kid that just came in and after 1 year immediately was incredibly productive in a Power 5 conference. Like, if he had played in the SEC, because I am a Florida fan, I can acknowledge it, there is so much SEC bias out there, and for good reason, too, because they produce winners and they produce tons of NFL talent, but
23 straight years of having the most guys draft.
And so because of that, there is absolutely going to be guys who are judged probably unfairly because of the conference that they play in. And I 100% believe that very well would have happened with Onyedike Uzomah if he'd have played in the SEC.
It's unbelievable. Like, 23 straight years of the most draft picks. They had the most this year. They were tied with the Big Ten. But they went into this draft in the last 10 years, 10 more picks than the next closest conference, which was the Big Ten, at 20. They had 30 first-round picks. But I'm with you, and I think that's something to look at because he keeps getting better. He's adding moves to his pass rush. He's gaining weight. He's a player on the rise. He's ascending. The arrow's pointing up. It's not going sideways at all. It's going straight up. He's a stock that's rising.
Felix was the first player the Chiefs selected this past weekend, but there were six more to come. Which other ones could make an impact for the Chiefs this year? We'll discuss that on the other side. 610 Sports Radio.
This is an NFL Draft Special with the Character Concerns Podcast crew. Subscribe and download today on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. 610 Sports Radio.
Jay Binkley, Chris and Osero. I'm Nick Schwartz. This is Character Concerns on 610 Sports Radio. The draft is in the books. Our Chiefs insider, Nate Taylor of The Athletic, posted a piece earlier today. It's a fun thing to do after the draft. The Chiefs post-draft depth chart. And Nate Taylor's worth the price of the admission over there, so I highly suggest checking it out.
Absolutely. Great writer.
Reading what he has to say, because you know what Nate's great about is he'll just kind of drop in little hints, you know, just little Easter eggs.
All the people in the know drop in just a few hints here.
Like,
and
he doesn't, it's not too heavy handed. He'll just kind of drop little nuggets in
little
there.
Nuggets.
And you got to be reading closely to pick them up.
I felt bad for his kid, by the way, at your event with
Why?
Nate, because he was sitting between me and B-Dub. And he was trying to get food.
Were you guys squeezing him out?
No, he's trying to reach for food, and there's like beat up on
y'all
the
was just tag teaming
yeah.
whatever food that was
I mean,
on the
I
table.
I just feel bad. I mean,
you could have helped him out a little
between
bit.
A rock and a hard place there.
Help him out.
We did, but he was watching you, and you know the food was right between B-Dub and I.
Well, what he says in the headline, and I'm not going to spoil it all for you, but what he says in the headline is perhaps no rookie starters, but position battles aplenty. We talked about judging this draft class and not judging them based off of what they do in year one. Do you agree at the onset? This is very early. We'll probably change our opinions a million times between now and the start of the season, especially at training camp once we start getting reports about, ooh, this guy was turning heads. Hey, watch out for that guy this year. Do you agree sitting here today on May 1st that you don't believe any of those seven rookies will start for the Chiefs week one?
Well, it depends on how we're defining start, because I can see a guy starting on game two. You have Coburn starting at the one technique. Because they use so many rotations with the defensive line, I don't know if it's fair to, you know, pinpoint somebody as a starter or not, because the Minshew, they will have on the inside more now to pair up with Chris Jones for pass rush. The only one, maybe, if he goes to St. Joe and makes a statement, is Wanya Morris. Like that Wanya Morris, that is one guy I think definitively could start. I think he and Coburn have the best chances. And Rice, it depends on whether the Chiefs can line up, start with the four-man set at wide receiver on certain games. It may be two of the next and starting 12 personnel with 12 or 13. I think the game dictates it. But if you want to say surefire starter, because Rice is not going to be one or two, we know that. But Morris has a chance, I do believe, to be that guy in
the
class. Coburn.
Right. So if we're talking about starters
two
in the NFL for the Chiefs specifically, if you're a top three receiver, right, you're going to be a starter because you got X, Y, you got your slot.
It depends on what we're defining as starter, because some guys come in for one play and they're gone.
Right. So receiver, it's a numbers game, but there's a lot of spots to go around. Same thing with defensive line. Defensive line, you can be a rotational player and I guess still be considered a starter. Like George Karloftis didn't start every single game, but you go back and you look at his snap counts and you say, okay.
Or like Nick Bolton the year before.
Right. It doesn't really matter that he wasn't starting right away. This guy was getting starter snaps. Wanya Morris is the interesting one to me, Chris, because he's only really got to beat out one guy. You can throw Darian Kennard if you want in there. I'm not ready to do that yet because we just haven't seen anything that would suggest he is competing for
that
a starting spot on this team.
One big battle.
It's going to be the biggest battle at camp.
I'm looking at Wanya Morris and I'm saying, beat out Lucas Niang, and you're the starting right tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs.
I think Wanya has a great chance to be the right tackle, the starter for the right tackle position this year, maybe from day one, because, again, he has all the physical tools. It's just a technical issue, and if he takes to the coaching that Andy Heck has for them, the offensive line coach, I think there's a very good chance that we could see him develop very quickly because he's a very talented player. This is a guy that was starting at left tackle as a true freshman at Tennessee and was winning all SEC honors as a freshman.
Next to Trey Smith.
Next to Trey Smith.
Be the same situation here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that has done very well on both sides of the line. So I'm not going to discount the talent there. I do think Felix is going to be able to put himself in a position to potentially get some starter snaps. And I do agree with Bink on this. Keandre Coburn, I think he's got a very good chance to be somebody who is at some point, maybe not at the beginning, but at some point during this year, could be their starting one tech. And if he does get to that point, that's going to make Chris Jones a hell of a lot more dangerous because now he can move over to the three. He can even play on the edge sometimes. And I'm going to tell you this. You get Chris Jones in a one-on-one matchup, and that's unfair for whoever is attempting to block him. We've seen that in the few times he's gotten some edge-rushing snaps, and they really wanted to do that 2 years ago with Jaron Reed, have him play the one and move Chris Jones over and let him get one-on-one matchups to help bolster the pass rush. It didn't work out because Jaron Reed just wasn't that guy for that role. But maybe Coburn can do that. I mean, Coburn, I think, is a guy that was drafted later than he probably should have been. I think he was undervalued.
Two rounds later, fourth.
Yeah, he was like four through six was about the range that was given. But I think Coburn has a lot of potential there. I still think if I'm going to go with who I think for sure is going to be starting the earliest is probably going to be Wanya Morris. But don't discount Coburn, and I think at some point Felix is going to get a lot of snaps this year.
Can you imagine third and long, a Minshew and Jones on the inside, Felix and Karloftis on the outside?
That'll be as close to the NASCAR formation that Spags likes to run. That'll be as close as you're going to get to that.
It
might be really effective.
You got pressure on the inside. You push the quarterback to the outside, and guess what? You got pressure coming from the outside.
Exactly.
And oh, by the way, you got defensive backs now in Snead and Connor that can blitz.
Who is Coburn competing with? Is it just Derek Nnadi? Is that basically what it comes down to? Beat out Derek Nnadi and you're a starter on this defense?
Essentially, I think he's Colin Saunders.
Who is now with the Saints.
With the Saints, yes.
I think Colin Saunders might be selling him short because I think, like, Colin was a true three tech. But I think Coburn can play the one. I think Coburn's
he's 100% one.
He's a double team guy. Like, that's a guy I think could be the anchor of your defensive line for the long term.
He's,
so.
He's going to be the best friend of Nick Bolton.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's going to take up two blockers, and Bolton can flow and do what he wants. And you know what? We talk about run stuffing. It's with the Coburn and having Nick Bolton, you know, flow behind you.
And he's really good against the run already, and he's a very effective pass rusher, too, on the inside.
Guys, he's just for everybody who hasn't grinded the tape on Coburn, he is 6'1", 332 pounds.
And his nickname is
Tank.
Snacks.
I love that.
I love that nickname. I'm calling him Snacks all season long.
Heck yeah. Let's stop calling him Coburn. Let's call him Snacks.
Let's call him Snacks. Well, we have to establish first that his nickname is Snags.
He said
we
it can't was. Just,
yeah,
he
but said we, it was. But, like, I'm sure that not a whole lot of listeners know that. So if we just start calling them Snags, they're like, who's Snags? But if we say Coburn, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I vaguely remember the fact that they drafted a kid named Coburn.
So just for what it's worth, he and Saunders, like, it's not a one-for-one comparison. Like, I think Colin Saunders probably a little more explosive.
Yeah.
Not quite as big.
This year
not quite as big. I think Coburn's got a little bit. He's got like a couple more inches and probably like 30 more pounds.
Rookie Colin Saunders, no. Colin Saunders this year, that would be nice if he was good. Because Colin was really good this year.
Yeah, he was. He had a career season, and that's why I think, you know, it wasn't necessarily a position that you went into the draft thinking, got to address this right away, and they didn't address it right away. But then you get a really nice value pick you do feel like can come in from day one and potentially start. What about in the secondary, guys? The Chiefs drafted two guys, Chamari Connor in the fourth round and then Nick Jones out of Ball State in the seventh round. How do you see those guys fitting into the mix in 2023?
First of all, real quick, just two offensive players ahead of all these because they keep going defense every time, but I'm with you. The defensive backs, I like. Connor's a guy they'll be on special teams, four-phase guy, will be out there all the time. I like Connor in the secondary. He's almost my favorite pick. I cannot, like, when you look at Chiefs and ready-made Chiefs, who are the guys that fit right into the scheme of what you want? Like, to me, Chamari Connor, Coburn too, Snacks. We can look for roles for him playing that one technique. But Chamari Connor, because he's got that luxurious Sneed skill set as far as being an excellent pass rusher, yes, a defensive back is probably one of your better pass rushers at this point. He led Virginia Tech in sacks back in 2019, which you don't see defensive backs doing. The difference between him and Sneed is, and I think he is the Sneed replacement eventually, is Sneed's a nickel corner or corner. This guy is nickel corner. Throw him over the tight end. Great tight ends in this division now. You throw him over the tight end, and he can play free safety and strong safety, which is different. He's the guy. Defensive backs, again, I like what the Chiefs are doing. They keep throwing darts at defensive backs, and they hit bullseye on much of them last year. Nick Jones, who knows? Nick Jones, the seventh-round pick out of Ball State. Got the measurables, was at the combine, did some good things. But again, it's hard to say because I don't see a place for him on the field right now.
Yeah,
like Chamari Connor, I see on special teams. I don't see
he'll
a place
play right
for
away.
Nick Jones.
Yeah,
yeah. I think Connor will be probably like more of an exotic package guy. Great blitzer, great against tight ends. He'll be great in a run in run defense. I think he's going to have a little bit of trouble getting on the field ahead.
Selected this past weekend, but there were six more to come. Which other ones could make an impact for the Chiefs this year? We'll discuss that on the other side. 610 Sports Radio.
This is an NFL Draft Special with the Character Concerns podcast crew. Subscribe and download today on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. 610 Sports Radio.
With Jay Binkley, Chris, and Osero, I'm Nick Schwartz. This is Character Concerns on 610 Sports Radio. The draft is in the books. Our Chiefs insider, Nate Taylor of The Athletic, posted a piece earlier today. It's a fun thing to do after the draft. The Chiefs post-draft depth chart. And Nate Taylor's worth the price of the admission over there, so I highly suggest checking it out.
Absolutely. Great writer.
Reading what he has to say, because what Nate's great about is he'll just kind of drop in little hints. You know, just little Easter eggs.
All the people in the know drop in just a few hints here.
Like,
and there.
It's not too heavy-handed. He'll just kind of drop little nuggets in
little
there.
Nuggets.
And you got to be reading closely to pick them up.
I felt bad for his kid, by the way, at your event with
Why?
Nate, because he was sitting between me and B Dub, and he was trying to get.
Were you guys squeezing him out?
No, he's trying to reach for food, and there's like beat up.
Y'all were just tag teaming whatever food that was on the
I
table.
I just feel bad. I mean,
well, at least you could have helped him out a little.
Between a rock and a hard place, there.
Help him out.
And we did. But he was watching you, and you know the food was right between B-Dub and I.
Well, what he says in the headline, and I'm not going to spoil it all for you, but what he says in the headline is perhaps no rookie starters, but position battles aplenty. We talked about judging this draft class and not judging them based off of what they do in year one. Do you agree at the onset? This is very early. We'll probably change our opinions a million times between now and the start of the season, especially at training camp once we start getting reports about, ooh, this guy was turning heads. Hey, watch out for that guy this year. Do you agree sitting here today on May 1st that you don't believe any of those seven rookies will start for the Chiefs week one?
Well, it depends on how we're defining start, because I can see a guy starting on game two. You have Coburn starting at the one technique because they use so many rotations with the defensive line. I don't know if it's fair to, you know, pinpoint somebody as a starter or not, because the Minshew they will have on the inside more now to pair up with Chris Jones for pass rush. The only one maybe, if he goes to St. Joe and makes a statement, is Wanya Morris. Like that Wanya Morris, that is one guy I think definitively could start. I think he and Coburn have the best chances. And Rice, it depends on whether the Chiefs can line up, start with the four-man set at wide receiver on certain games. It may be two of the next and starting 12 personnel with 12 or 13. I think the game dictates it. But if you want to say surefire starter, because Rice is not going to be one or two, we know that. But Morris has a chance, I do believe, to be that guy in the Coburn.
Right. So if we're talking about starters
two
in the NFL for the Chiefs specifically, if you're a top three receiver, right, you're going to be a starter because you got X, Y, you got your slot.
It depends on what we're defining as starter, because some guys come in for one play and they're gone.
Right. So receiver, it's a numbers game, but there's a lot of spots to go around. Same thing with defensive line. Defensive line, you can be a rotational player and I guess still be considered a starter. Like George Karloftis didn't start every single game, but you go back and you look at his snap counts and you say, okay.
Or like Nick Bolton the year before.
Right. It doesn't really matter that he wasn't starting right away. This guy was getting starter snaps. Wanya Morris is the interesting one to me, Chris, because he's only really got to beat out one guy. You can throw Darian Kennard if you want in there. I'm not ready to do that yet because we just haven't seen anything that would suggest he is competing for that starting spot on this team.
One big battle.
It's going to be the biggest battle at camp.
I'm looking at Wanya Morris and I'm saying, beat out Lucas Niang, and you're the starting right tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs.
I think Wanya has a great chance to be the right tackle, the starter for the right tackle position this year, maybe from day one, because, again, he has all the physical tools. It's just a technical issue, and if he takes to the coaching that Andy Heck has for them, the offensive line coach, I think there's a very good chance that we could see him develop very quickly because he's a very talented player. This is a guy that was starting at left tackle as a true freshman at Tennessee and was winning all SEC honors as a freshman.
Next to Trey Smith. Would be the same situation here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that has done very well on both sides of the line. So I'm not going to discount the talent there. I do think Felix is going to be able to put himself in a position to potentially get some starter snaps. And I do agree with Bink on this. Keandre Coburn, I think he's got a very good chance to be somebody who is at some point, maybe not at the beginning, but at some point during this year, could be their starting one tech. And if he does get to that point, that's going to make Chris Jones a hell of a lot more dangerous because now he can move over to the three. He can even play on the edge sometimes. And I'm going to tell you this. You get Chris Jones in a one-on-one matchup, and that's unfair for whoever is attempting to block him. We've seen that in the few times he's gotten some edge rushing snaps, and they really wanted to do that 2 years ago with Jaron Reed, have him play the one and move Chris Jones over and let him get one-on-one matchups to help bolster the pass rush. It didn't work out because Jaron Reed just wasn't that guy for that role. But maybe Coburn can do that. I mean, Coburn, I think, is a guy that was drafted later than he probably should have been. I think he was undervalued. He was like four through six was about the range that was given. But I think Coburn has a lot of potential there. I still think if I'm going to go with who I think for sure is going to be starting early, the earliest is probably going to be Wanya Morris. But don't discount Coburn, and I think at some point Felix is going to get a lot of snaps this year.
Can you imagine third and long, Minshew and Jones on the inside? Felix and Karloftis on the outside.
That'll be as close.
That is a nasty pass.
That'll be as close to the NASCAR formation that Spags likes to run. That'll be as close as you're going to get to that.
You got pressure.
It might be really effective.
You got pressure on the inside. You push the quarterback to the outside, and guess what? You got pressure coming from the outside.
Exactly.
And oh, by the way, you've got defensive backs now in Snead and Connor that can blitz.
Who is Coburn competing with? Is it just Derek Nnadi? Is that basically what it comes down to? Beat out Derek Nnadi and you're a starter on this defense?
Essentially, I think he's Colin Saunders.
Who is now with the Saints.
With the Saints, yes.
I think Colin Saunders might be selling him short because I think, like, Colin was a true three tech. But I think Coburn can play the one. I think Coburn's
he's 100%
one. He's a double team guy. Like, that's a guy I think could be the anchor of your defensive line for the long term.
He's going to be the best friend of Nick Bolton.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's going to take up two blockers, and Bolton can flow and do what he wants. And you know what? We talk about run stuffing. It's with the Coburn and having Nick Bolton, you know, flow behind you.
And he's really good against the run already, and he's a very effective pass rusher, too, on the inside.
Guys, he's just for everybody who hasn't grinded the tape on Coburn, he is 6'1", 332 pounds.
And his nickname is
Tank.
Snacks.
I love that.
I love that nickname. I'm calling him Snacks all season long.
Heck yeah. Let's stop calling him Coburn. Let's call him Snacks.
Well, we have to establish first that his nickname is Snags.
He said it was.
But, like, I'm sure that not a whole lot of listeners know that. So if we just start calling him Snags, they're like, who's Snags? But if we say Coburn, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I vaguely remember the fact that they drafted a kid named Coburn.
So just for what it's worth, he and Saunders, like, it's not a one-for-one comparison. Like, I think Colin Saunders probably a little more explosive.
Yeah.
Not quite as big.
This year
not quite as big. I think Coburn's got a little bit. He's got like a couple more inches and probably like 30 more pounds.
Rookie Colin Saunders, no. Colin Saunders this year, that would be nice if he was good. Because Colin was really good this year.
Yeah, he was. He had a career season, and that's why I think, you know, it wasn't necessarily a position that you went into the draft thinking, got to address this right away, and they didn't address it right away. But then you get a really nice value pick you do feel like can come in from day one and potentially start. What about in the secondary, guys? The Chiefs drafted two guys, Chamari Connor in the fourth round and then Nick Jones out of Ball State in the seventh round. How do you see those guys fitting into the mix in 2023?
First of all, real quick, just two offensive players ahead of all these because they keep going defense every time, but I'm with you. The defensive backs, I like. Connor's a guy, they'll be on special teams, four-phase guy, be out there all the time. I like Connor in the secondary. He's almost my favorite pick. I cannot, like, when you look at Chiefs and ready-made Chiefs, who are the guys that fit right into the scheme of what you want? Like, to me, Chamari Connor, Coburn too, Snacks, we can look for roles for him playing that one technique. But Chamari Connor, because he's got that luxurious Snead skill set as far as being an excellent pass rusher, yes, a defensive back is probably one of your better pass rushers at this point. He led Virginia Tech in sacks back in 2019, which you don't see defensive backs doing. The difference between him and Snead is, and I think he is the Snead replacement eventually, is Snead's a nickel corner or corner. This guy is nickel corner. Throw him over the tight end. Great tight ends in this division now. You throw him over the tight end, and he can play free safety and strong safety, which is different. He's the guy. Defensive backs, again, I like what the Chiefs are doing. They keep throwing darts at defensive backs, and they hit bullseye on much of them last year. Nick Jones, you know, who knows? Nick Jones, the seventh-round pick out of Ball State, got the measurables, was at the combine, did some good things. But again, it's hard to say because I don't see a place for him on the field right now.
Yeah.
Like Chamari Connor, I see on special teams. I don't see
he'll
a place
play right
for
away,
Nick Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Connor will be probably like more of an exotic package guy. Great blitzer, great against tight ends. He'll be great in a run in run defense. I think he's going to have a little bit trouble getting on the field ahead of like Edwards and Cook and Reed, but I think he'll have a place every now and then, and maybe he works himself better into that rotation as the season goes along. Nick Jones, right now, he's a project. He's not anywhere near
seventh-round pick. Yeah.
Seventh-round pick. He's an outside corner. He's got outside corner potential. He's really good in the press. He can't play off the ball, and he has trouble with locating the ball down the field. So right now, I would say he's probably a liability, but maybe a year from now, you see where he is, and maybe at some point he can contribute as a corner.
That's a great point, but there is a laundry list of players ahead of him.
Yeah, way ahead of him. So there's no rush to put him on the field right now.
Last year was defensive back draft for the Chiefs, and right now those guys have a year on you.
There was one position that wasn't addressed in the NFL draft. What does it tell us about the Chiefs' thought entering 2023? We'll tell you on the other side. This is Character Concerns on 610 Sports Radio.
This is an NFL draft special with the Character Concerns podcast crew. Subscribe and download today on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. 610 Sports Radio.
I'm not lying. Jay Binkley was just giving out grades for outfits at the Met Gala.
Which is not something that I would normally do, like ever.
But it's draft. We're not giving out. If I said, Bink, if you're not going to give me draft grades, then I want Met Gala outfit grades.
You want an opinion. I gave you one.
I'll just let you know. He gave Patrick Mahomes and his wife, Brittany, 10s.
Yeah.
Across
the
board.
They look fantastic. They look fantastic.
Oh, they got an invite?
Yeah.
Oh, that's big right there.
I mean, MVP, man. That's NFL big. MVP. He is transcending sports.
I mean, Kim Kardashian couldn't get one until she got with Kanye.
Yeah.
So that's a big get
for
a football
player. Yeah, but he's actually
accomplished
something.
Yeah, but like, Kim was very famous before she got with Kanye. And she still couldn't get one. So that's a big accomplishment for Patrick.
I think it helps that Patrick is now sponsored by Hugo Boss.
That's probably a good idea. That's probably a good connection to have.
But they didn't go wild. It's just a classic look for both of them.
They don't need to go wild. They're not in that vein.
But Chris said,
you're attracted to classic looks, right?
You need to look at this, Chris, because it's 100% classic look. Look like you're dressed now.
I'm in a hoodie and some sweatpants.
Classically dressed Chris Unocero.
Yeah, Chris. They always say dress for the job you want. Well, we kind of are.
Yeah, we're all pretty casual tonight.
Yeah, this is how we do it on radio.
We're gonna dress it for the job we want.
He's Jay Binkley. I am Nick Schwert. The Chiefs didn't draft a running back this weekend, which was a little bit of a surprise. I wanted, you know, going back to what we were talking about last week. It was Albert Breer who was talking about Jahmyr Gibbs. The Chiefs potentially having interest in Jahmyr Gibbs in the first round, who ends up going 12th. Not only did they not spend a first-round pick on a running back, they didn't spend any draft picks on a running back.
Very classy from Mahomes. I agree.
You agree with that? Is that a good assessment?
Yeah, that's a good assessment.
Chris has assessed the fit, and we are in unanimous agreement.
Yeah, they're geared tonight.
Two thumbs up.
What a whirlwind for him. But go ahead.
Were you guys surprised that the Chiefs didn't take a running back in this draft?
No, not at all. I mean, would a fit like Deuce Vaughn been nice? But these are luxury items. You ever sit around there and you got a 55-inch TV on your wall and your neighbor goes out and gets like a 65 and you're sitting there going, do you need it or not? Is it a luxury item or not? Yeah, sometimes I have to reel myself in too. It's called reeling yourself in. What running back would be, but it was nice to hear the Jet McKinnon talk today from NFL Network, the James Palmers of the world, what Ian Rappaport. And this is something they should do. I know he's 31, but he's a young 31 because he's missed some time. But talking about bringing Jerick McKinnon back, who's the best blocking running back on this time. It's not even close. He was the best value on the Kansas City Chiefs last year. You can make an argument that Jerick McKinnon was the best value in the National Football League last year. Because Von Miller, you could say early on until he got hurt. But Jerick McKinnon didn't sign with the Chiefs until June 14th last year for league minimum. So that guy was making league minimum. It had six straight games of a touchdown and was the best blocking running back in the NFL. It looks like the Chiefs are going to sign him. So, no.
He likes to take his time, by the way. I think he just likes to take his time with his offseason.
But he talks about it. Why no one signed him? And he gets mad, and then he takes his time. So, it's one or the other for him. But they did go out and get kind of a good running back that went to the combine, Denarik Prince. They got a ton of money from the Chiefs as an undrafted free agent. So, throw him in the mix. So, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I think that I'm not surprised they didn't draft one. I think a lot of the Deuce Vaughn stuff we were talking about was just us thinking about how beautiful it would be to have his talents in this offense. But I agree with you. It very much looks like Jerick McKinnon is back in the fold now. It's all but confirmed. So I'm very excited about the prospect of having Jerick back because he has been an incredibly valuable backup running back for them, and I certainly look forward to seeing what he can contribute on the team.
Here's the interesting thing about it, and is would he really been a draft pick? Because this is the new philosophy. Teams are throwing seventh-round picks because they don't want to pay undrafted free agents. The price of undrafted free agents is going up. For example, Denarik Prince this year, according to Aaron Wilson, 231,000 guaranteed, 216,000 base salary guaranteed, 15,000 signing bonus. Guess what? That's more than seventh round picks. But we're seeing a seismic shift. It kind of unbehooves people to be picked in the seventh round, because when undrafted free agents are now getting so much money, it's better to throw a dart in the seventh rounder if you want to go get an undrafted free agent anyway. Because this big money they're giving Prince, this is seventh round, sixth round type money they're giving him.
Is Clyde going to be on this roster?
I don't think so.
It certainly seemed like he wasn't going to be at the end of this. I mean, he didn't even show up to the victory parade, went to a fashion show.
They have till tomorrow for the fifth-year option. They've got till tomorrow for this deal.
I don't think he's getting the fifth-year option. I do not think he's going to get it. No.
I know he likes fashion shows. Is he at this one?
I don't think he got the invite. No. I don't think he's quite got the cachet.
No. Definitely not.
Clyde.
I think he gets traded. I think at some point this summer.
For what?
For a nothing, like a seventh round pick. Yeah. It's not going to be worse. 65-inch
TV, Samsung.
Yeah, they're gonna get a new popcorn machine at the Chiefs facility.
They don't even get a Samsung.
You're gonna get the Insignia TV there.
Think about spin his energy drink all up the computer.
I don't think they're probably gonna get it at most like a seventh round pick, and that's about it.
By the way, is valuable because of what I just said.
Right. Yeah, I think there's value for him for another team because of his skill set. He's still really young. He's like, what, 24? Like, he's still really young. It's just he's out of the rotation here. I think Denaric Prince is going to make this team. I think you made a good point, Bink, about how much money they tossed him.
Yeah.
They gave him a lot of money for an undrafted free agent.
He's 4.41 speed. He's a big dude.
Basically,
as well.
His contract's almost fully guaranteed this year. He's going
to
be on the roster.
You do not have to draft a running back. I think this is proven out. And when you see running backs go in the top 10, why I had so much problem with Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs is you can get guys like Prince at value to throw on here. Who knows if he makes the roster? I bet he does. His physical talent is through the roof, but they draft ahead. Clyde's deal. And the one thing, I know people are down on Clyde and wasted draft pick and all this. I will say this. Clyde filled a need. Did they actually need a running back? Well, it was the last pick of the draft, but Clyde was an outstanding receiving running back in college. And as I made the point before, you think of the SEC being the best conference of football, 23 first-round running backs. You know he's the only running back in the history of that conference to have 1,000 yards rushing and at least 50 receptions in a year. To me, that's attractive. Because that fits right into the offense with Andy Reid. They needed a running back. Like, I can see why they did that.
One guy we haven't talked a ton about so far might have the highest ceiling of anybody in this Chiefs draft class. We'll discuss him next on 610 Sports Radio.
This is an NFL Draft Special with the Character Concerns Podcast crew. Subscribe and download today on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. 610 Sports Radio.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.